This episode of Intelligent Medicine is brought to you by Cedarside. Cedarside's original 100% organic insect spray kills bed bugs, mosquitoes, fleas, ticks, mites, scorpions, roaches, and more, but is completely safe for your home, pets, and family. Go to cedarside.com, use coupon code Hoffman at checkout for free shipping, or call 800-842-1464 and mention you heard it here. Welcome to the Intelligent Medicine Podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Ronald Hoffman, and today we're going to talk about, something that is a very, very important component of overall health, which is our sexuality. We're going to talk to an expert. He is a medical doctor who specializes in urology, but focuses on both male and female sexual problems. He is Dr. Mohit Kara, who has written a book called Recoupling, along with Mary Jo Rapini. Dr. Kara is medical director of the Houston Hospital for Special Surgery. He is author of numerous publications dealing with testosterone in both men and women, and dealing with various aspects of coping with sexual problems. And so he's supplied his knowledge in a new popular book called Recoupling, and he's here to answer our questions. How are you doing today, Dr. Kara?
Very well, thank you.
Good. You make some very interesting points in the book. First of all, let's talk a little bit about the health benefits of sex. Are there actual tangible benefits to an optimal sex life?
Well, I think it's interesting you say that. You know, it works both ways. We know that healthier patients tend to have more sex, and we know that patients who engage in sexual activity, there are beneficial effects in the body. One, it decreases stress, and cortisol levels can go down. So patients who are more sexually active tend to have less stress. We also know there's a significant benefit to the relationship. There was an excellent study that came out several years ago looking at the benefits of a quality of a relationship. And it showed that those couples that engage in regular sexual activity enhance the quality of the relationship by twofold. Those couples that do not engage in sexual activity actually detract from the relationship quality by up to fourfold. So we know that sex is a very important part of couples and maintaining a healthy relationship.
So it's not just the sexual Olympiad here, you know, how many orgasms you have per week. It's also about the emotional and psychological benefits of sex in terms of bonding in a relationship.
Absolutely. So it's critical. You know, the couples, you know, many couples come in, and it's typically I will see that one of the two partners wants to engage in sexual activity. Many times, you know, the female partner is really looking for the emotional bond, and it's therefore it's really important to try to bring both the male and the female partner up to the same level and same playing field.
Well, absolutely, because it's kind of like if there's any kind of a disparity one way or the other in terms of desire for sex or ability to perform sex, there's going to be the potential for discordance, shall we say.
So right. So you bring up a very important point, so I want to give you a little story about that.
Sure.
You know, when I first started my practice 8 years ago, I only treated men. I'm a urologist, and I started treating male sexual dysfunction. And I was able to get these men who have not had a great erection in many years to have these great erections with medications. We were able to raise their libido significantly with testosterone, and they were very excited. But the problem was, they had no one to have sex with. In other words, their wives were postmenopausal. They hadn't had sex in, 5 or 10 years. They went home and they said, okay, I want to have sex. And their wives would say, look, I'm not ready to have sex. They haven't had sex in 5 or 10 years. And what makes you think that, I'm ready to engage in sexual activity? And what I found out quickly was that I was creating conflict within the home, because many wives would call me and say, look, we were doing great for many years until he came to see you, and now he wants to have sex all the time, and I don't want to have sex with my husband. So you created a problem. And that's when I started treating female sexual dysfunction. It was about 8 years ago, did a mini fellowship, and started treating women, because you really don't want to raise the libido and sexual performance of one partner without the other. Either keep them both high or keep them both low, but don't have a discordance, you know?
Well, absolutely. Well, in a moment, we're going to talk a little bit about female sexual dysfunction. And as erectile dysfunction developed an acronym, ED, there's FSD. But first, let's talk bit about the issue from the male side. You know, testosterone, very controversial. Prescribe it. I feel that it, in large part, is safe. But there are issues associated with testosterone usage. And namely, a recent study has called into question the use of testosterone from the standpoint of heart health. And a lot of doctors, and I think a lot of men, have run scared since that study. And the doctors may be reluctant to prescribe testosterone because of liability issues. The men may be concerned about heart issues. You know, that famous disclaimer in the Viagra ads, ask your doctor if you're healthy enough for sex, that whole thing. And what about that heart health testosterone connection?
So let's talk about that. So, you know, for many years, maybe five years plus, there have been numerous studies demonstrating that low testosterone increases the risk for heart attack or stroke. That's been shown, even mortality. There have been other studies showing that even giving men testosterone may decrease the risk for heart attack or stroke. But in 2013, there was a study that came out by a woman named Vegan, physician Dr. Vegan, and then there was a study in 2014, January, by Dr. Finkel. And both these studies suggested that there may be some increased risk for cardiovascular disease with men taking testosterone. And so further investigations were done, and my own personal bias is that there were significant flaws with those studies, significant.
I thank you for saying that, because this is, although I'm not a urologist, this is the information that I've been sharing with my audience whenever the question comes up. And so from your standpoint as a urologist, what went wrong when these studies were done?
Well, you know, for both of them, for example, and if you look at the Vegan article in 2013, there were some errors that were printed in the manuscript. There were two corrections, formal corrections, that were performed by the authors. One was that, you know, they mentioned that over 1,000 patients had been excluded. When they were further asked to explain why those patients were excluded, they said it wasn't 1,000, it was really about 100, and 10% of them were women. And so there were significant concerns with the validity of the paper. In fact, 26 international organizations have asked for the formal retraction of the manuscript, which it was never done. But 26 international organizations have asked for that from JAMA, and it was never retracted. So there are some concerns with the manuscript, even with the Finkel manuscript. There's no control group, no randomized placebo. They only looked at men in the first 90 days. For some reason, they didn't look beyond the 90 days. And, we really have some, I personally have some concerns with those articles.
So the first 90 days may have been, you know, that a few additional events may have been recorded, possibly because, similarly to the Women's Health Initiative study, where they looked at short-term administration of estrogen, and this is in the 1990s that this came out, that there was somewhat of an increase in the risk of heart attack in women getting the estrogen. But the estrogen was in women who were older, women who were perhaps at higher risk, and then they didn't look at long-term benefits on the heart because they pulled the plug on the study pretty quickly.
Right, very similar, but you know, this was a database study on the Finkel article. So this is a database that says if you took testosterone one time, you were considered, if you filled one script, you're considered in the T treatment group. Now, how can you assess for compliance?
Yeah.
How do you know?
Their levels weren't measured. I don't
even
think
30 days. Right. So there's you don't have blood levels on all patients. You don't know that the improvement in testosterone was marginal. And so, you know, there's some significant concerns, and the ability to base the data on these two studies. Now, there was a meta-analysis by Zhu, which did suggest that maybe there may be an increased risk. But when their meta-analysis was performed by Mario Maggi's group in Italy, they said that actually there was no increased risk with a large meta-analysis. And so, in the numerous studies after these studies came out, suggested that testosterone may not increase the risk of heart attack or stroke. But in all fairness, I think the FDA, what they're trying to say is more studies need to be done. And that's fair because we don't have a large randomized placebo-controlled trial as of yet. We have one called the Big T trial, which is going on, and the NIH will give their data this year, but it's less than 1,000 patients. But we don't have something as the magnitude of the Women's Health Initiative for men for testosterone. And you could argue that until we get those studies, we should at least let patients know that we don't have a large study showing the safety, and more studies need to be done. That's fair. I think that's a fair assessment. But I do have concerns with the two studies that were published where that led to people saying that testosterone causes heart attack or stroke.
Right. So what argument could be made, what converse argument could be made in defense of testosterone as a means of enhancing cardiovascular health? I think that argument could also be made.
Well, that's a great point. So let's look at risk factors for cardiovascular health. Insulin resistance, elevation of hemoglobin A1C, blood pressure, trunk obesity, metabolic syndrome. If you look at the literature would support that in very well that patients taking testosterone can see a decline in hemoglobin A1Cs, they see an improvement in waist circumference, they see improvement in blood pressure. These are all risk factors. Weight loss is seen also as well. Now remember, and this is very important, these indications I'm mentioning are off-label. That's not in the label to give testosterone for the treatment for hemoglobin A1Cs and for waist circumference and for blood pressure. But these are things that have been documented in the literature and studies that patients have seen an improvement in.
And it's pretty common to see, for example, in hypogonadal men that they're diabetic, that they're pudgy, that they're increased waist circumference, and that sometimes giving them testosterone increases their desired exercise, increases their muscle mass, and may therefore improve their glucose handling and their cardiovascular capacity.
Absolutely. So again, you may say that the effect is indirect on cardiovascular, right? I mean, if you decrease the risk factors, such as obesity, hemoglobin A1C, blood pressure, then you theoretically could decrease the risk for cardiovascular disease. And so I think, I agree, more studies need to be done. But the initial studies are quite encouraging.
What about the nitric oxide endothelium connection? You talk a little bit about that in your book, and with or without testosterone, you can have a beneficial effect on your heart and on your circulation.
I do believe so. I think the endothelium is key. You know, as many listeners know, that the endothelium is the lining of the blood vessels, and really dictates the ability for the blood vessel to relax and contract. And it's important to keep the lining healthy and the endothelium healthy, because if it gets diseased or injured, you're more susceptible to plaque formation, which can then result in ED, heart attack, stroke. So we think protecting the endothelium is important. Now, we know that the key to that is nitric oxide. Nitric oxide is responsible for the vasodilation of the blood vessels. And precursors to nitric oxide are important, such as arginine, carnitine, and citrulline. And when you get those precursors into the body, it does help produce more nitric oxide, which then protects the endothelium, in my belief.
There's some literature on dietary nitrates as well, as in beet juice and certain foods that deliver
true.
The precursors.
Absolutely. And so I actually ask patients to, I give them supplements. For example, I ask them to pick up a GNC or arginine, carnitine, or citrulline. There are companies now that have put all of these into one pill, which is very convenient. There's a company called Strondevo that puts them all into one pill, which makes it convenient. But I do tell the patients that these are precursors to nitric oxide. I do find, in my own personal experience, that PDE5 inhibitors such as Viagra or Levitra, Cialis tend to be more effective in the setting of these precursors. And so I do ask my ED patients to pick them up.
So, but you also talk about the problem with Viagra, or alternatively Cialis and Levitra, that it kind of deals with the symptom but doesn't deal with the underlying problem.
Exactly. So I'm glad you brought that up, because, I'll give you an example. Let's say today you broke your leg, and I would have two choices. I could give you Vicodin, really for the rest of your life, and you could still continue to walk and it would mask the pain, but your leg would progressively get worse over time. The second option would be to just fix your leg. the problem I have with taking Viagra on demand is that you're not fixing the disease. ED is a progressive disease. Every man will get erectile dysfunction if he lives long enough. So it's a progressive disease. So giving a man Viagra and covering the problem is not solving the problem. And that's what Viagra to me is. It's just covering and masking the problem. And eventually most men will come to you and say, "Doc, I've been on Viagra for 5 years and it no longer works." Of course, it's not going to work forever. It's because the disease process is getting worse. Now, there are many natural ways to reverse the ED process. And to me, those are much more effective and much more helpful to the patient than just giving them Viagra.
Yeah, actually, in the book, you talk about ED as, to some extent, a lifestyle problem, that exercise and diet and perhaps can help to reverse ED.
Absolutely. So I didn't, you know, where most of this came from was from the cardiology literature. The cardiologists have spent, you know, a tremendous amount of time and years studying the endothelium. And I believe that the endothelium is the common link between cardiovascular disease and between ED. And just to preface this, you know, we know that if a man develops ED today, he has a 15% chance of having a heart attack or stroke within 7 years. So ED is the first sign of a heart attack or stroke.
It's sometimes been referred to as the dipstick for cardiovascular disease. That's in the days when cars had dipsticks. Now I got a new car and I asked where the dipstick was, and they says no dipstick. It's all electronic now.
That's exactly right. So ED is the first sign of heart attack or stroke. And so typically what we do is I ask these patients, you know, to come in, and we have a machine that looks at endothelial function. And basically it's a device that looks at how well the blood vessels relax and contract. And it gives me an idea of how well the endothelium is functioning. And the cardiologists have shown, and this is pretty amazing, if you look at patients who have endothelial dysfunction, they've shown that diet and exercise improve the endothelium. They show that statins have improved the endothelium. They show that smoking cessation and even aspirin, there are ways to improve the endothelium. So what we do to treat ED is just copy the same paradigms that they've used in the cardiac literature. And excellent studies have shown that diet alone can significantly improve endothelium and ED. Exercise alone can significantly improve ED. Starting patients on statins, although somewhat controversial, but some newer literature showing that statins improve ED. I believe that putting patients on daily Cialis, giving blood and oxygen to the penile tissue, improving is a treatment. It causes hypertrophy of the cavernosal muscles as opposed to atrophy. And I do believe that testosterone is also very beneficial in improving the muscle content.
Yeah, let's focus a little bit on the daily Cialis. Now, for people who are not familiar with this, there's Viagra and there's Levitra, but then there's Cialis, which in Europe used to be referred to as le weekend, which means that it's a sort of a long-acting phosphodiesterase 4 inhibitor.
Yeah.
Is that the correct terminology?
Exactly. So it's a phosphodiesterase inhibitor. That's exactly right.
But it's long acting, so it's not as dramatic. It's not like the thing that you take, an hour before you're going out for a big date. It's something that you take, and you can take daily. And now they tout it not just as a treatment for ED, but also as a treatment for urinary frequency. So
that's right.
It's okay to do that day in and day out.
Absolutely. So long term data. So think about this. So the dose for on-demand intercourse for Cialis is 28 milligrams. The dose for the daily is 5 milligrams every day.
Right.
But remember that the half-life of Cialis is roughly 17 hours. And remember that it's usually out of the body within four half-lives, but the efficacy is typically about two half-lives. The half-life for Viagra and Levitra is typically 4 hours. So those drugs are not as efficacious after about 8 hours, but Cialis is pretty efficacious for anyone from up to 36 hours.
Mm-hmm.
And so most men will take Cialis Friday at 5 o'clock, and usually it'll cover them Friday night, Saturday morning, Saturday night, Sunday morning, because they don't have to think about it. It's in the system.
Mm-hmm.
So you're right. They used to call it the weekend drug. You take it on Friday and you're covered. But to me, the better treatment for ED is a daily dose. Mm-hmm. Because every day it's putting blood and oxygen to the peanut tissue. Studies have shown that
whether or not you have intercourse, it's not even about completing sex or having an ejaculation or orgasm. It's actually sort of rehabbing that area.
I like your choice of words because it's exactly what it's rehabilitating the penile muscle. Uh-huh. And it's putting blood and oxygen to the penile tissue. So it actually, if you look at animal studies, it's myotrophic. It increases the smooth muscle content. And remember that the reason why we get ED is because we get atrophy of the cavernosum muscle, and then we develop venous leak. What does venous leak mean? It means the guy will tell you, "Doc, I can get the erection. I just can't maintain
right,
the erection.
Right.
He's leaking." And so if you put him on daily Cialis, in my opinion, it helps because of hypertrophy of the smooth muscle, and it can prevent venous leak. Obviously, this is more studies that need to be done, but there have been some initial studies showing hypertrophy of the cavernosum muscle. And so, to me, that is a treatment as opposed to just giving someone Vicodin when they break their leg.
Right.
You're helping reverse the disease process. Now, you also mentioned another important thing. It's used to treat BPH. And many men, as you know, will get BPH as they get older. It's a natural part of aging as well. And so for the man who has BPH and he has ED, this is a great medication that treats both problems at the same time.
Great. All right, good stuff. We usually divide our podcast into two parts. So in part two, I don't want to give women short shrift. We'll talk a little bit about FSD. That's the female counterpart to ED, female sexual dysfunction. We'll talk about the role of the testosterone might play for women and other strategies to get women to get women's groove back, so to speak. Our guest is the author of a great new book, the co-author of a great new book. It's Recoupling, A Couple's Four-Step Guide to Greater Intimacy and Better Sex. Dr. Mohit Khera, who's an MD, also an MBA and an MPH, wrote it with co-author Mary Jo Rapini. I'm Dr. Ronald Hoffman, and we'll be right back with more of Intelligent Medicine.